Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
This is Radiolab.
Today we're spending the entire hour on a single story, which we saw in the Tampa Bay Times. Kelly Benham, a journalist, published an unbelievably wonderful set of articles about her and her husband, Tom French, who's also a journalist. They had a baby, except their baby came very, very early. So full term, as we've mentioned, is 40 weeks. Their daughter arrived 23 weeks and 6 days, which works out to be just a little bit over halfway.
Now, just to put that in context, if a baby is born before 22 weeks, it's generally considered a miscarriage, and pretty much no doctor is going to intervene. If a baby is born after 25 weeks, there have been all kinds of studies which show that doctors then feel morally obliged to save that life, no matter what the parents say. So before 22 and after 25, things are pretty clear. But between 22 and 25, you land in this gray zone, this strange little liminal space between life and death, where you have to answer some really tough questions.
Like, should my baby live? At what cost?
And who gets to decide?
And ultimately, when does life begin?
And she has shown us that so many
Kelly and Tom, like many parents who land in this zone, decided that for the hardest question,
ultimately, it's up to the baby.
The baby will tell them whether it's going to stay or whether it's going to go.
So they delivered by C-section, and their daughter, who at that point didn't have a name, was whisked off to the neonatal intensive care unit, or the NICU. And eventually, they went to see her.
In the incubator.
For the first time.
And she was, weirdly perfect. Like, she had all the parts. These long fingers and long feet, delicate little nose, and she had hair and fingernails and eyebrows and, you know, all the things that they're supposed to have. But she was translucent. You could just see right through her. You could see all the veins running under her skin. You could see her heart thumping in her chest.
Wow.
And her eyes were sealed shut like a puppy. And she was like beat up. Like she had bruises all over her body and she had a black eye just from the, you know, they were very careful with them when they're born, but just that very delicate handling kind of batters these babies because they're so fragile. I mean, it was, like, weird. Like, I didn't know how I was supposed to feel. I mean, you want to believe that the minute you meet your daughter, there's going to be, like, butterflies, you know, or, like, unicorns or something. It's supposed to be the best moment of your life. But there was so much terror inside that moment.
I was terrified because I love being a father. My relationship with my sons is extremely important to me. And I was really terrified that she would be so alien, having been born at 23 weeks, 6 days, that I wouldn't recognize her as my daughter and that I wouldn't bond with her. That thought was filled me with a real dread. And I went up to see her. I could see that she was only half finished, barely a pound at that point. So tiny, my brain couldn't even process how small she was. And the nurse, Gwen, she said, well, you can touch her, you know. And I was stunned because I didn't think I would be able to. And so she had me, I'd already washed and sterilized my hands once, and she had me do it again. And she showed me how to reach in through this little round porthole into the incubator and explained how to touch her. You don't rub the skin because the skin will come off if you do that when they're born that early. You just press gently. And so the baby was lying there, not with her fists, but with her arms extended. with her palms open. So her right palm was right there when I reached my left hand in, and I just put my left finger gently into her palm, and she just grabbed on tight. And in that moment, all my fears about not being able to bond with her washed away. And what got to me was how I could be so afraid when she was so strong. And at that point, she was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And I told her, hey, Peanut, it's Daddy. So that was when I met my daughter.
Now, when a baby is this early, the parents and the doctors are watching it very carefully, trying to guess, is this baby ready to be out in the world? Is it going to make it? And Tom says when she grabbed his finger, that wasn't just them bonding. He felt like she was saying something to him.
She made her will very, very clear.
The baby declared itself, like declared its will to live.
And that was a phrase we heard again and again.
Some babies will, if I can use the term, declare themselves over the first few hours and days of their life.
That's a neonatologist we spoke to, Keith Barrington.
You get a gut feeling.
And that's Diane Lazell again, the nurse practitioner.
After meeting the baby, that this one looks very fragile, or this one can do it.
The baby has declared itself. Now, there's a real question as to, like, what does that mean? What are you seeing when something that premature declares itself? And here we ran into a real difference. Parents will often see will.
An incredible will and resolve.
Doctors and nurses?
No.
Not so much.
That sounds a bit too mystical for me.
I wouldn't take it as there's a voice inside the baby saying, I'm going to be a fighter, I'm not. One is sick enough not to be able to fight, and one isn't.
Can you see a spirit in a kid?
I think you can see some fight.
I call it spunk a lot of times.
That is Tracy Hullett.
I'm a registered nurse.
She was Kelly and Tom's primary nurse.
At All Children's Hospital.
And like everyone we spoke to on the hospital side, when it comes to this issue, she chooses her words very carefully.
I maybe try to keep things a little bit more neutral than talking about their will to live.
Because, you know, a baby at 23 weeks barely has folds on the outside of its brain. Its brain is still smooth for the most part. So who knows what it's capable of thinking or feeling?
Well, that's a difficult question.
And the truth is, things like
fight,
spunk,
may just boil down to physiology.
Maybe that baby had a few more lung buds to start with.
Maybe it had an easier time in utero. May have nothing to do with will. In fact,
the baby grasping the finger of a parent, it's actually a reflex that the babies have, a grasp reflex. I never tell a parent that because they think it's an intentional movement.
Because, you know, putting yourself in a parent's head, if you've got to decide how much am I going to push, how much of my heart am I going to pour into this little creature, maybe if you can see something like will or something like intention, if you see, oh, that's a person in there, or maybe if you don't see it, maybe it's the only way you've got to make this decision.
As my wife, the professional ethicist, often says, we don't make important decisions in our life for rational reasons very often.
Keith and his wife, Annie Jeanvier, have done a huge amount of research into the ethics of extremely premature births. But one of the primary reasons we wanted to talk to him is that, in addition to being a neonatologist and a guy who publishes a lot of stuff in this area, he and his wife recently had a baby girl who was born at 24 weeks and 5 days.
She weighed 720 grams.
1.5 pounds.
And she was actually in my own NICU.
Oh, wow.
I was actually the director of the unit where she was.
So he was in his unit, you know, the place where he usually worked. He saw babies make it, not make it, and now suddenly he was a parent in that place. And several weeks after his baby was born, there was a very, very big complication.
She actually didn't move at all for about 36 hours. And we thought maybe it was a little...
Maybe it's time.
Yeah.
So they decided, he and his wife, to let her go. peacefully.
But I went back into the NICU to see her.
And something happened. He looked down, and he saw her lips move. Barely.
She started sucking on a soother that the nurse had put in her mouth.
She was sucking on a pacifier, and it was just a reflex. The most basic baby reflex, the sucking reflex. He knew that.
But just that movement of sucking on the soother
changed his mind completely.
I went back to Annie and said, we can't stop. I really need to continue and give her the chance.
But you knew that the sucking response is not, that's a fairly deep brain.
Yes, it's a very basic, it's just the brain stem. It's not, you know, you need a lot more than be able to suck to do well. But as I say, I was trying to be the parent there and not the neonatologist.
Well, could you remember if the doctor in you was surprised at the father in you?
Yeah, I think I was actually a little. Yeah, I think if I'd have been more evidence-based and rational and scientific, I could have gone either way. But just as a father, I couldn't at that point let her go.
I just didn't really know how to process it. I felt like she was... I just had this very acute sense that she had just been like violently ripped out of my body. And I could feel where they had cut her out, you know. And like, I just wanted to put her back and make her safe, you know.
Yeah.
And I had all these questions going through my head, like, you know, like how long does she have to live for us to get a birth certificate, for this to be real? Like, I felt like she might die and like it wouldn't count, and I wouldn't be a mother, you know what I mean? And like, what if she died? Like, what would happen? Like, would we have a funeral? Do they make caskets the size of shoeboxes? I mean, all these, like, it's so screwed up that that's the stuff you think about, but your brain goes places you just can't control or predict. And if she... I wondered, like, if she knew, was she really aware that I was even standing there? Like, was it just a reflex that made her grab my finger? And when she grabbed it, did she know I was there? And if she didn't know I was there, did she wonder where I had gone? And did she feel alone? And is she scared?
All she could really do at that point was sit with those questions.
And it just became this waiting game.
We'll continue in a moment.
Hey guys, this is Steve Chiavello calling from Priceville, Ontario, Canada. Radiolab is supported in part by the National Science Foundation and by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, enhancing public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. More information about Sloan at www.sloan.org.